Everyone, welcome to CS50's first walkthrough. I have to do this introduction because we're also being filmed. These walkthroughs are going to be every Sunday at 7 o'clock from 7 to 8:30, usually depending on how long or short the problem set is. We'll never go past 8:30, so we encourage you to come. But of course, the videos will be available on the website probably around Tuesday or Wednesday. So if you like to get a head start on the problem sets, as you'll find in, as the semester goes on, is advantageous, please do come on Sunday nights. They'll be right here, Emerson 108. So now, I just want to know, have you guys read through the problem set? It's okay if you haven't. I just want to know how much to assume that you guys already know. Raise your hand if you read the problem set. Okay, so about half and half. Okay, cool. That's perfectly fine. This walkthrough and all the walkthroughs after this one are meant to sort of talk you through how you would go about doing this, or maybe tell you how a person would do these algorithms, but not necessarily tell you the code. So I won't be writing actual code, unfortunately, as much as you might want me to. But we'll be writing something called pseudocode a lot of the time, and this is actually a good way to start your problem sets, regardless of whether you go to the walkthroughs or not. You should always sort of think of the problems in your head and walk them through in this pseudocode. So pseudocode is somewhere between C language and English. It doesn't include semicolons and stuff like that, so don't say, hey, you forgot a semicolon. Doesn't matter in this case. So yes, I'm not going to be writing exact code, so don't ask me for exact code, but you'll find that this will be very helpful to get you started thinking about the problem set. So this week's problem set is 15 pages long. That sounds intimidating, but it's not. Probably the first half of the problem set is getting you set up with the Linux environment with using Terminal or PuTTY, depending on if you're on Mac or PC. So do read through that part carefully. There are exact commands for, you know, how to SSH. Maybe you don't know what that is. You'll know as soon as you read the problem set. So those kinds of things I'm not going to go through because they are very self-explanatory. If you do have questions, please email the staff. There's a staff email, help@cs50.net, that you can use when you have a question, but do try first to find the answer on your own. Maybe go to office hours, maybe Google it. You'll find that all this stuff is really on Google. So there's the first couple of pages that are just walking you through. Then you're asked to write your own Hello World program. And I don't know how many highs David had in lecture, maybe up to high six or something like that. So you should be sort of familiar with that. It shouldn't be very hard for you to do, but just play around with it, make it fun. Write your own little message, and that'll be your first C program. And then you're going to be faced with sort of three problems to do, three challenges, and they are the ISBN problem. So you're going to be checking a book's ISBN to see if it's a valid ISBN. So this is sort of what bookkeepers do. If they scan a book and it says it's invalid, then they know that they have to rescan it. So this is the kind of checker you'll be implementing. Then there's the greedy problem, and it's about how to give change when you're, you know, working at a supermarket or something like that, how to give change with the least number of coins. So you'll be implementing that algorithm. And then you'll be doing a very, very primitive version of the Mario game board. You'll see it'll not really look like anything that's fun to play with, but you'll probably learn a lot from making it. So let's dive right in. First is the ISBN problem. So ISBN numbers are 10 digits long, and only the first 9 digits actually are the ISBN number. The 10th digit is what we call a check digit. So the 10th digit is supposed to check if the first 9 digits were entered or read, whatever you want to say, properly. So if we look at an ISBN number, and this is actually the book, How Computers Work. It's one of the supplementary readings for the class. Okay, so if you look at this ISBN number, these 9 numbers are the sort of significant numbers, and then this is a check digit to make sure that all of these are correct. So what does anyone know what the algorithm is from reading the problem set? How you use this to check the rest? How you use the 10th digit to check the other 9? Does anyone know from reading the problem set? Okay, something like that. So come on in. Grab a seat. Hi, William. Before you ask or answer a question, just say your name. I'll try to remember. If you ask questions often or answer questions often, I'll probably remember your name. Okay, so you, You take the first digit, you multiply it by 1, the second digit by 2, the third digit by 3, so on and so forth until you get to the ninth digit. You add up those products. So you add up this times 1, this times 2, this times 3. You add up all those products, and then you divide that by, you divide that by 11, and you get the remainder. Now, if that remainder equals 6 or equals your 10th digit, the ISBN is correct. Now, we're going to modify this algorithm a little bit to make it even simpler, even though it's already pretty simple. And we're going to say that we multiply the first digit by 1, the second by 2, the third by 3, all the way down to the 10th digit, which we include, and we multiply the 10th digit by 10. When we add all this up and divide by 11, our remainder should be 0. Do you want me to repeat that? Okay. So we're going to multiply first digit, I'll write it out. We're going to multiply first digit by 1 plus second digit by 2 plus third digit by 3 dot, dot, dot to 10th digit by 10. And what we're going to get a sum. That sum divided by 11 should return an answer, and the remainder should be 0. Okay, so the remainder, when the sum of these products is divided by 11, should be 0. So the reason this works, if this is over your head, it doesn't matter. You don't really need to know it, so don't worry if you're confused. But the reason this works is that if you're dividing by 11 without the check digit, which is how the algorithm was actually formed, if you divide by 11 with only adding these products, and you have this remainder, so you have an extra 6, let's say, and then you add 6 times 10, that's actually 6 times 11, so it has to be divisible by 11. So your remainder has to be 0. Okay, so that's why it works. You don't need to know why these things work, you just need to be able to program them. Okay, so this is sort of in human language. We're going to try to transfer it to C without giving away the answer, don't be frustrated with me if I can't answer some questions or can't tell you something so explicitly. But the first thing we're going to need to do is prompt the user for an ISBN number. Because what we want our program to do is to ask the user, give me an ISBN number. The user gives the ISBN number. They're always going to enter 10 digits. So don't worry. Obviously, in real life, someone could, type something incorrect and mess up your whole code. But for the purposes of this first problem in this problem set, we're going to assume that they're not going to do that. So you're going to get these 10 digits from the user. So how can we do that? You don't have to say an exact code, but maybe some keywords that David used in lecture maybe to get input from the user. How are we going to ask the user for input? Okay, but first how do we ask them? How do we just say, give me an ISBN? Printf. Okay, so that's the first thing you're going to need. Just straight off the bat with most of actually the programs you're going to be writing. Actually, all three that you're writing in this problem set, you're going to need to start with just a simple printf. Ask your user, give me an ISBN, give me a height, give me a this, give me a that. So you want to store it in a variable, yes. So you're going to have to create this variable, store it. Now, how do we actually, someone said this before, you said get int, right? Is it, exactly, who said it? Nice. Yes, I was trying to trick you maybe a little. You can't actually use getInt in this case because an int can only hold up to, if it's an unsigned int, so if you don't worry about positive, negative, it can only hold up to 4 billion or so. So not every ISBN number is going to be able to fit into the size of an int. So you're going to use this thing called a long. There is a thing called a long, which is, for some reason, actually the same size as an int. So you have to use long. So you're going to use, there is a function, I'll write it for you. And does anyone know where this function is? Like where it... Right, it's in the CSFT library. So that means what do you have to do at the top of your program? And that's it? And then it'll work?
When you compile it, you'll...
Yes, okay. So we've been getting emails over the help email. Oh, sorry, the question, oh, the answer. Okay, the answer is that when you compile, you also have to use -lcs50. In part of your GCC command, because we've been getting emails, in the past 2 days, how come my code doesn't recognize get long or all these CSFT libraries? I included the library, Yes, but also when you compile, you have to tell the compiler to link the CS50 library to your, so this is dash L. So one of my friends typed a 1 here, and was like, it's still not working, you told me the wrong thing. No, it's an L. Yeah, do you have a question?
Is GCC and that all together?
Yeah, so it would be GCC, and then if you're renaming your program, it would be dash O, ISBN.C. And then this. Okay. So now we, yes, William.
You only put C, not CF.
What?
The dash L needs to be CF.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. You're right. This is CS50. Dash L CS50. Okay. All right, so now we have our ISBN number. What do we do? Anyone? What do? We've loaded our ISBN number in. Let's say we have it in a variable called, let's say we call that variable ISBN. What do? We want to, okay, let's say, what would a human do? If you wanted to implement this algorithm, you know, adding up all the products, what would you do? What's the first thing you would do here? Take the first digit, okay, and multiply it by 1. Okay, so for, come on in. Okay, so we're going to see in a minute why the computer can't actually do it from left to right simply. So we're going to have to do it from right to left. But it's the same logic. So you're going to take the last digit and do what? Multiply by 10. Right, so you're going to take the last digit multiply by 10, the second to last digit multiply by 9, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How do you isolate digits? How do you get this 6? Think about just in math how you would get the 6. No. Yeah, you. Yes, the answer is remainder when you divide by 10. So C has, and most programming languages, have this function called modulo. And modulo is written as a percent sign. So A percent B is the remainder when A is divided by B. So remainder when A divided by B. Okay, so we're going to use the modulo operator to get this 6. So what would we actually write? What's A and what's B in this case to get the 6? You said when it's divided by 10, right? So B is 10. What's A? Exactly. Okay. So that's how you're going to isolate this 6. So now, of course, yes, you could go down, and actually when I tried to do this problem set when it was assigned to me, I, of course, you know, did this, and then this, and then this, and then this, and this. But obviously, I didn't submit it like that because we do need to have a for loop for this. So we can't just hard code in sort of the algorithm. We're going to have a for loop that goes through. So you're going to have a for loop that goes from what to what?
10 to 1.
From 10 to 1, exactly. Great. Okay, so you're going to go from 10 to 1. And then what are you going to, so in the for loop, you're going to have a variable, let's say I, that starts at 10 and then decrements. You guys know the decrement operator? It's minus minus. So it would be I minus minus would be decrement I. We can actually, I don't think it's giving you too much if we actually write out the for loop. It's very useful. For loops are probably the most useful things you'll learn in the first couple of weeks. So. Okay, so that's going to be your for loop. And then what are you going to do inside this for loop? What do you want to do when I equals 10 first? What did you want to do when I equals 10? You want to take which digit? The last digit, and multiply it to 10. Okay, so you're going to take, so how do we say we get the last digit? ISBN mod 10, okay? So you get the last digit, you multiply it by 10, and then what? How do you get the second to last digit? ISBN divided by 10, right? So you're going to get this 6, right? You're going to do what you want to the 6. Then you're going to just get rid of the 6. You're done, right? But there's something missing. What do you have to do before you can get rid of the 6 and go on to the 3? Yes, you need to store the product somewhere because that's going to be sort of your running sum. So that's another thing you have to take into account. You have to have, at some point, declared this running sum variable. What type is that going to be? The running sum, yeah. It's going to be an integer. So you're going to have this running sum that you kind of keep as you go on in your for loop. So you keep the product 6 times 10. Then you keep the product 3 times 9, 1 times 8, et cetera, et cetera. And then at the end, when your for loop exits, what do you want to do? Now you have this product, this sum. What do you want to do? We said that the algorithm, you need the sum divided by 11. You need, when the sum is divided by 11, you need the remainder to be 0. So then at the end of your for loop, after, you know, this exits, you're going to want to check if your remainder of your sum divided by 11, so that's sum modulo 11, you want to check that that's 0. If it's 0, what do you do? Right, say yes. And if it's not, you say no. And you've done the first third of the problem set. Simple? Questions?
How are we going to get the computer to get the other digits?
The ones before the 6. Okay, right. So when you get the 6, you multiply it by 10, and you store that into a sum, then you divide by 10. So now you've lost the 6, right? And so now when the for loop executes the next time, when it does ISBN mod 10, it's going to get the 3. And then you divide by 10 again. After you've added that to your running sum, that product, 3 times 9, you add that to your running sum, divide by 10 again. This time when you modulo ISBN by 10, you get the 1. Clear? Yes.
When you divide two integers, is the remainder, it's not, of course it's not safe because they're integers, but like, is it truncated or is it rounded?
It's just going to be an integer.
Right, but like, say you divide like 3 by 2, would that be stored as like a 1?
It would be stored as a 1.
Wow. So
yeah, it's not going to be, no, it's stored as a 1. Any other questions? Yes. Yeah. Well, I had to give you something to figure out on your own. Okay, if you look at this for loop, you have the I decrementing, right? So after it's 10, it's going to be 9, right? And then it's going to be 8. So you're going to use that somewhere in your addition and multiplication, right? Because the I is first going to be 10. Like, you can use, the reason these I's are here is because you're going to use them inside the for loop. So you can use this I. And the first time you go through, that I is going to be 10. The second time you go through, it's going to be 9. The third time, it's going to be 8, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, in the back.
How do you get the running sum to add? Like, you're going to have one value if it's the output of the loop, and then you're going to have it add to the previous?
No, you're going to have, you're not going to have one thing that's the loop is going to return, it's not going to return a value. The loop, inside the loop, you're going to take, like, I don't want to write actual code here, but inside the loop, you're just going to have, if you've declared your sum variable up here, so like int sum, oh, sorry, for the people viewing at home, the question was, how are you actually going to add this to your sum? So inside this for loop, how do you communicate sort of to the sum variable, right? Is that the question? Okay, so up here, you've declared this sum. Let's say we've initialized it to 0. And then in here, you're just literally going to write, you know, sum equals sum plus whatever. Anyone else? Okay. Then we're going to go on to greedy.c. Has anyone heard of a greedy algorithm before? The greedy algorithm is pretty common in computer science. It's also the easiest way to explain it and think about it is through the change example that we're actually going to use. So you're at a store, you pay money, the cashier has to give you change. The cashier obviously is not thinking, oh, well, now I'm going to use the greedy algorithm, but subconsciously they're using the greedy algorithm because it just makes most sense. You're not going to give someone change back with all pennies if you need to give them, you know, 30 cents. You're not going to give them 30 pennies by any means. So that's sort of the problem that we want the computer to do that. Now, you're not actually going to have to return. The way that your program is going to work is you're going to ask the user for how much change is necessary. They're going to tell you, and then you're going to just tell them how many coins is the least number. What's the least number of coins that can return that kind of change? So you're not going to have to say, return one quarter, one dime, one nickel. You're just going to have to say 3 coins. So it's pretty simple in that regard. So we're gonna. So the greedy algorithm is you take the biggest sort of bite out of the problem that you can in the first iteration of it. Then you take the biggest bite out of the smaller problem that's remaining, et cetera, as you go. So in the change example, if you had to give someone back 66 cents, what's the first thing you would say in your mind? What's the first coin you would give them?
2 quarters.
Okay, well, right. You give them 1 quarter, then you give them another quarter. Then you give them a dime, a nickel, a penny, right? So this is what we want to instruct the computer to do. But obviously, we have to be very, very explicit with the computer. So let me erase all this ISBN stuff so we don't get confused. Okay. So like I said, in each of these problems, we're going to have to ask for user input. So that's going to remain the same. You're going to ask your user for how much change is necessary, and they're going to tell you. Here, the difference, though, is that you are going to have to check your user input. So if the user says you have to give them negative change, that's no good. Okay, we can't give back negative change, so you're going to have to ask the user again. Say, are you sure? How much change, really? Or whatever you want. So does anyone know, David actually did do this in lecture. He made the person at the computer keep re-entering a number until it satisfied some check. Do you remember how he did it?
While.
It sort of while. Special type of while, yeah.
Do while.
Yeah, so a while loop, the theory is that a while loop works because, you say while change is greater less than zero, keep asking this, but then it's never going to ask it for the first time. So you use do while so that no matter what, you're always going to ask the user at least once because that's in the do part of the while. So now all these commands that I say, oh, use a do while, and you don't really know if you don't really know what that looks like, it is in the lecture, so you could go to that, or all these commands are on Google. So if you do like C programming, do while, you'll get a whole tutorial about it. There's also the man page. There's a bunch of tutorials that will give you this kind of information. So whenever I say something like that, that's where you would look. So yes, you're going to use the do while so that you first prompt the user how much change is necessary, and then, so that's the do part, so you're going to store it in some variable, and then in the while part, you're going to check that variable to make sure it's greater than zero. Check the value that the person gave you, which is now stored in your variable. Check that it's you want it to be greater than zero, but since you're saying while, your while is actually going to have change less than zero. Do you get why? Because you're going to keep asking the user while change is less than zero. So while what you want is false, you're going to keep asking the user. Okay, so once you have the amount of change they need, what are you going to do? It's the same thing we said the person would do. They find out that they need 66 cents. What do you think in your mind to find out that you're going to give them a quarter now? What was that? Okay, you don't actually have to divide. The answer was divide it by 25 or mod it by 25. You don't actually have to divide it at all. You just have to know that what? Yeah, you just have to know that it's greater than 25. If you have to give them anything greater than or equal to 25, you're going to give them a quarter at least. Okay, so that's what you're going to do. You're going to check is what amount of change I need to give greater than 25 or equal to. If it is, give them a quarter. Then what?
You run the same process again.
Exactly. You run it again. So a common mistake people make is say, okay, now I checked for quarters. Now I'm going to check for dimes. But you do, hi, welcome, come in. But you do have to check again for the quarters because you don't want to go right to dimes afterwards. So you check the quarters for as many times as you can give back quarters. So what kind of loop would that be? Well, in this case, it's two. Not three, but yeah. So what kind of loop would you use in this case? If you want to keep checking as long as it's greater than 25. Just while, in this case, just while. So while the amount of change I have to give back is greater than 25, give them quarters. But obviously, you're also going to have to keep track of how many coins you've given these people because the ultimate thing your program is going to return is how many coins you need to give the person. Not what coins, but how many. So you're going to have this sort of counter variable that I'll let you think about how to implement. It's not very hard. David did in lecture. So you're going to have this counter that counts how many coins you've used, and you're going to increment that every time you subtract money away from your change, right? Because when you give them a quarter, you're going to subtract 25 cents. When you give them a dime, you're going to subtract 10 cents. just make sure, this is probably common sense, but just make sure that you start with the quarters. So we're going to do quarters, dimes, nickels, pennies. Because obviously, if you start with pennies, you're just going to end up giving them all pennies. You're going to have an unhappy customer. So yeah, at the end, you're just going to print out how many coins you need to give the person, and that's it. So you guys, that'll be a printf. And of course, it'll have the variable number of coins, right? So it's not going to be a printf like in High World when you just say, you know, when you hard code really what you want the computer to say. In this case, you're going to be substituting a variable. But again, that's been in lecture, so it shouldn't be too bad. And that's actually it for greedy.c. So any questions? Okay, great. Cool. No questions because I gave it all away, or no questions because it's simple, or? Okay. I won't say as much for Mario.c. Okay, so the last part of this problem set is the Mario part. So we're building a, like I said, very primitive Mario board. It's not going to look at it. If you show it to your roommate, they're not going to say, oh, cool, and be like, wow, that's your homework, really. I thought CS50 was hard. But it will actually be sort of a challenge to implement, or at least it was for me. So you'll see. It's not that bad. So in this case, again, for a third time, we're asking for user input. So we remember how we do that. We're going to ask user input. In this case as well, we're checking that it's between certain boundaries. So this time, the user input, for those of you who haven't read the problem set, we're making, ooh, that's bad. This is awful. I'm sorry. Okay, we're making a Mario board like this. What's the plural of asterisks? Asterisks? Okay, you're going to use asterisks, but I'm drawing X's because it's quicker. Asterisks. Okay, so this is the game board that you're going to draw, and the input that you're going to get from your user is how tall you want the board to be. So there are limitations to this. Because our screen is 24, so this height is 24 on the terminal, and you should always keep, if you're on Mac, your terminal, if you're on Windows, your PuTTY, you should always keep it at the standard size that they give you, because that's what your user is presumably going to be using. So if you expand the size, you're not going to have, you're going to think that they're going to see more asterisks than they will. So you want to keep it at 24, but the reason we don't even want them to put 24 because we still want to have that blinking prompt. You know, the blinking prompt that's on the bottom that has your username and lets you type things. So if we want that, and that's going to take up one line, so we have 23 lines to build our tower hill. What's it called? Half triangle? I don't know. Okay, so we're going to want to limit the user height variable that the user is going to put in to be between 0 and 24, but not including 24. So we're going to want it to really be between 0 and 23 because we want it to all be able to fit, and obviously we're not going to build a negative half pyramid. It's called a half pyramid. There we go. Okay, so we can't build a negative one, so we're going to limit the user's input. So in this case, you're asking them for the height, and for as long as that height is not in your range, between 0 and 23 inclusive, you're going to want to keep prompting them because you can't work with what they've given you. Okay, so once you've gotten this pyramid, you also need to know that the width of the screen is 80. So it's 80 by 24, and this 80 is going to be really important to making this work. So let's think about how, let's say our computer is starting from right here. What's it going to do mentally? Like if you were doing it, if you were the computer, what would you do? You would start here, and then what would be sort of your thought process to draw these stars here? If you know the top two have to be stars because supposedly Mario is supposed to stand here, but we're not going to make Mario or the clouds or the pipe here. Okay, so what would you do? How would you draw these two stars?
78 spaces.
Yes, you would draw 78 spaces, two stars. And the next one, 77 spaces, three stars, et cetera, et cetera. So you're going to need to use what kind of construction in order to iterate through this?
Four loops.
Four loops, great. Told you they were useful. So now your for loop is your main for loop. You're going to need more than one, you'll see. But your main outer, you can nest for loops. So your outer one is going to be iterating over what? What are we going through? Your main for loop. First you're going to check what, then what, then what. What's it going to be going through? From what to what?
From
Remember when we had the ISBN number, we went from 0 to 10? What are we going to here? 0, yeah, okay, so in this case is the height 8, is that what it is? Yeah, so you're going to go from 0 to your person's height. So that's going to be your outer for loop. You're going to go from 0 to your person's height. And then what's the relationship between, or actually, okay, fine, 0, we can work with 0. You can work with 0 or with 1. You can start with 1 and go up to including the height, or you can go from 0 and less than the height. Understand? Okay. So when you're in the 0th row, or if you want first row, how many stars are there going to be in that 0th row? Let's work with 0. 2. And then in the first row, 3. So obviously the number of stars is related how to the row number? Plus 2. So if you, that's what I'm saying. If you start with 1, it's going to be plus 1. If you start with 0, it's going to be plus 2. So just make sure if your for loop starts with 0 to make it plus 2 stars. So when, so then you're going to have a variable, right, to determine the number of stars you want to draw. And then your variable for the number of spaces you're going to draw. And the spaces plus the stars is going to equal what? 80. And the stars is going to be 2 more than the height, than the row that we're at right now. The height that we're at right now. So that's how they're all sort of connected. Do you get it? You're going to run into problems of, wait, how do I first draw spaces, then stars? Does anyone have any idea? So you would just place the for, you're going to have one for loop that's going to be the outer for loop, right, going down the heights. Then you're going to have a for loop that draws spaces for as many as you need, right? So we said 80 minus the number of stars. And then you're going to have a for loop that draws the stars. And then what? What's missing? You've drawn the spaces, you've drawn the stars. It's really simple.
Change the line.
New line, yeah. You're just going to draw a new line so that you're on the next line. So it's basically for loops within a for loop. That will get this for you. Okay, yeah.
So how do you draw the spaces? Is it like a print?
Okay, the question was how do you draw a space? It's just what you would expect. It's printf. And here is actually a space, right? So on your keyboard, you hit space. And that's it. And you guys remember new line character? What is it? Backslash n. Yeah. That's also within a printf.
And can you add each of those spaces? So can you say like something plus printf space?
You mean like in PHP when you add to URLs?
So we're going to have to add spaces in each for loop, right?
Right.
So my number of spaces, if you said, and I want to go to 78, should I say like 70, like number of spaces I have plus printf space?
No. This printf is going to be within a for loop that executes, let's say, in the first one, 78 times.
Oh, okay.
So the for loop is going to say, you know, do this for 78 times, but in for loop language. And then this is going to happen 78 times in this first case. And then it's going to decrement. But this you only want to do at the end of every line. So don't put this in this, like if you put it in this for loop, in the for loop with the space, then you're going to have space, new line. It's not going to look right at all. Any other questions? If not, we're pretty much done. I'll stay back if anyone has any other questions. That's really all for PSET 1. You'll run into little bumps, but there will be office hours every night. I think starting tonight, or maybe starting tomorrow. I think starting tomorrow. Starting tomorrow from 7 to 11 in B14. That's the basement of the Science Center. It's a lot of fun. But yeah, this walkthrough was shorter than usual because this problem set is shorter than usual. But if it takes you a long time, don't be concerned because it's short when you've gone through the course and are looking back. But it took all of us a while. So I'll stay back if anyone has any questions.